Good afternoon to all of our listeners on CJTR Community Radio at 91.3 FM, and welcome to everyone tuning in over the internet at cjtr.ca. Wherever you are, welcome to Human Rights Radio, hosted weekly by Amnesty International volunteers, who are a worldwide movement of people dedicated to the promotion of human rights and the safety of all human beings. We're building a world in which every person enjoys the rights included in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and other human rights standards. Thanks to Canadian band Mr. Something Something from Toronto and the Afrobeat poet Ikwunga for our theme song, You Are Beautiful. My name's Jim Hutchings, and this week I'm joined by our co-host Mona Hill. And Michaela Schultz of TransAsk Support Services joins us today as we explore a number of issues about people who are transgendered. Welcome, Michaela.
Thank you.
Welcome back, everyone. This is Mona here. I was thinking about our theme song that we play every week, and Ikwunga says, he talks about building bridges in spaces between me and you, and I was thinking this is exactly what we are here today to do, is to talk about building bridges between people who are transgender and communities, and promote education and understanding about what being transgender is about attitudes towards people who are transgender, about societal and cultural expectations, maybe values that relates to the problems that are encountered on a daily basis by people who are transgendered. So welcome, Michaela.
Thank you, Mona.
And I wanted to note that November 20th is Trans Day of Remembrance, and maybe we can start off on that note and talk about a little bit about November 20th and why it's happening, when it first started. Give us a little bit of background on that, and then move into something positive in terms of legislation that has been tabled at in Ottawa about a new bill that was introduced. Actually, it's been reintroduced into the House of Commons since the last election.
Right. Yeah.
So let's start with Transgender Day of Remembrance.
As you said, Transgender Day of Remembrance is November 20th. It's a day set aside to recognize individuals who have been murdered because of transphobia. Transphobia being hatred and violence and discrimination propelled by one's misinformation of transgender people, I suppose. Yeah. So,
is this a global movement?
Yes, it's actually the full name of it is International Transgender Day of Remembrance. So it's recognized all over the globe.
Okay. And how long has this been in place?
I can't remember exactly, but it was probably the mid-90s, late 90s, 98 maybe.
What kind of statistics do you have on that? Anything? Like, you know, it's to remember people who have been murdered. I'm just wondering how many people get murdered because they're transgendered.
Well, our awareness of trans folk who have been murdered is growing. Statistics on the occurrences are growing as our awareness of the trans community grows. So it's hard to say whether there's more transgender people being murdered or if we're just collecting more data on that, right?
Well, I'm wondering also if maybe people who are transgender are maybe feeling a little more comfortable about it being in public and exposing themselves to possible violence. I mean, not as, you know, not as blaming the victim, but more as I feel comfortable coming out and showing that I
perhaps
am transgender.
Yep.
And thereby people who have transphobia have more access to seeing them.
Right, as the transgender movement, I guess we could call, grows. There's more, perhaps more trans people are feeling empowered to come out and into public spaces more often than before.
Right.
So, yeah, like you said, putting themselves in possibly dangerous situations.
Right.
But, I mean, that's not in every instance, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
part of what I've learned in the process of my education over the past years is, generally speaking, when the public talks about transgender people, it's within the context of gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender.
Right, right.
It seems like the T is always at the end.
Right. Yeah.
And then, you know, I've talked to some people I've known, including you, about your feelings regarding being in the boxed in those little ticky boxes,
right,
so to speak, about being boxed in with gay, lesbian, and bisexual people. Some people feel it's fine, that it doesn't
right.
bother them, and some people feel that it does not belong. Being a transgender person is nothing to do with being gay, lesbian, or bisexual.
Right.
What's
yeah.
your take on this?
Well, I agree with both sides. I mean, the struggles that transgender people face and the struggles that LGB people face are very similar in coming to terms with one's identity in the face of social adversity. Issues of coming out to family and stuff like that is very similar, but what's dissimilar is transgender identities or gender variant people. Gender identity in general has nothing to do with sexual orientation, so we feel we're misrepresented a lot of times because we're presented in the context of sexual orientation, right?
Right.
So,
how does it relate to the psychology? And, you know, I kind of wanted to get into the DSM-5.
Mm-hmm.
And for those who don't know what that means, the DSM is the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual
yeah.
of, I guess, mental illnesses, basically.
It's
different types of diseases.
It's a document of the American Psychiatric Association.
Right.
And it's the Bible, so
yes,
to
it
say,
is. And it's a huge, big, fat one.
Yeah.
I've actually, yeah, had a chance to go through one.
Right.
And it's sort of been a standard procedure of a lot of psychiatrists that when they're working with people who are transgender or transvariant, to use this manual to sort of diagnose mental illness.
In the DSM currently, there is a diagnosis called gender identity disorder, which is essentially an individual whose gender identity is not congruent with their assigned sex, their assigned birth sex. So, I mean, our society has not progressed to the point to realize that gender can be variant in all individuals, and because of that we have to pathologize people mm-hmm. who are variant in their gender by, you know, diagnosing them with gender identity disorder. I mean, there's lots of opposition to that idea, but
I think it's growing more and more, isn't it?
Definitely, yeah.
Right. Well, and science is discovering more about the
right,
physiology
right.
issues, number one.
Right. And just a realization that gender variance does exist mm-hmm. in our society, in our culture, and has and does in every culture all throughout history. I mean, there's examples in almost every society that's ever existed of gender variant people. I mean, it's just seems that Western influenced society tends to pathologize your identity.
What
if
do you mean
don't.
By pathologize?
apply a mental diagnosis to
okay.
it. Not a healthy identity, I
as
suppose.
Something that's being
right.
unhealthy.
Yeah.
Right.
Something that needs to be fixed.
Right, exactly.
So, yeah, that's good. So the difference between the physical appearance of someone and versus the emotional... The emotional feelings can... And also, I guess you could throw in biological, because there's also there's biology involved in a lot of
definitely
in
right
this.
There's
that's not necessarily noticeable to the person, the onlooker, right?
Right. I'm like, biologically, there's variances in the human sexes as well. I mean, there's a...
And do the psychiatrists not understand that? I mean, they are medical doctors.
Well, they... We identify people who are intersex, which...
Right. And what does that mean?
Intersex is someone who's... essentially not completely male and not completely female.
And is this in relation to genitalia or to hormones?
It can be
sort of thing,
the appearance of their genitals. It can be chromosomes. It can be hormonal influences.
Okay.
There's actually about 17 different conditions. I hate I'm pathologizing right now, right?
Yeah.
Conditions of intersexuality, so... I mean, biologically, as human beings, we vary in both our sex and therefore our gender as well.
And it turns into a matter of living a life trying to be accepted publicly, doesn't it? More than anything.
Certainly, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, our traditional views of gender and the gender roles we're supposed to conform to restrict a lot of gender variant and transgender people in their expressions. And a lot of times they're looked upon as outsiders. And I mean, how you express yourself may not be acceptable or what have you.
Why does it make people angry?
I don't
know. This is something that
I don't
has
know.
Always puzzled me.
I mean, there's a wide range of... how people may respond to something they don't understand, and I guess anger and hatred is one of those responses.
Having to do with not understanding, perhaps.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. So I brought up the DSM-5 because there's a movement to change this or having it taken completely out of it, the issue of transgender people? Or
actually, the DSM-5 is in the middle of being revised.
Okay.
They expect to release a new version of it by 2013, and they are making changes to gender identity disorder. Many will argue not good changes.
How so?
it's further pathologizes gender identity. In some cases, making it more difficult for people to access health services in treating their gender identity disorder.
Really?
I mean, you need that diagnosis in order to, as a transsexual individual, if you want to change your body physically, either through hormones or surgery, you need the diagnosis of gender identity disorder to do so.
So on one hand, it can be something positive so that you can receive treatment. But on the other hand, as you say, it's pathologizing.
Right.
A person who feels perfectly normal in the way they feel about themselves.
Exactly. Yeah.
Regardless of their physical appearance, but emotionally and psychologically, they feel normal.
Right, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's six of one, half dozen of the other. Or it has been.
Yeah,
and you're saying
certainly.
It may be changing to make it more difficult?
Well, there's lots of feedback and backlash that have been a result of the proposed changes. They've gone back to committee to make some more changes, and the American Psychiatric Association is quite open to feedback from the trans community. So
you think that would make a positive change, perhaps, or a positive impact?
I'm hoping so.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you know if the DSM is used anywhere else but North America?
Not that I'm aware of.
I wonder what's used in other, or what kind of format or kind of perspective they have in other countries.
World Health Organization's DSM. Or, I can't even
think
of the name.
It'll come to you. When it comes to you, you can interrupt. Yeah. So the WHO has something.
Yeah. Yeah. And their term for this condition, and I'm making quotes with my fingers here, is gender dysphoria.
Gender dysphoria.
Yes. Yeah.
So out of the norm, basically.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. And growing up, did you feel out of the norm? when you were young?
Definitely. I mean, I always had feelings that were out of what was perceived normal. Mm-hmm. I suppressed a lot of that. I acted in a way that was acceptable by the people around me in order to hide who I mm-hmm. was. So, and with that, you know, comes a lot of tension and anxiety and I mean, what results from trying to hide your true identity, right?
Right. Tension and anxiety.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then perhaps seeking out medical help, psychiatric help. Well, and then you end up with a psychiatrist.
Right.
Telling you that you have to be fixed.
Yeah. Yeah.
This seems to be historically the way it's gone, isn't it?
Yeah, for yeah. sure. I mean, yeah. you're always told that who you are and how you feel is wrong.
Right.
I mean, and that's why a lot of people, a lot of gender variant people and transgender people are still in the closet about mm-hmm. who they are, because, I mean, we were raised in this culture too. We know how
right.
we're supposed to feel about challenging gender norms. So, I mean, you have a lot of hesitation in coming out as your true gender.
Right. Well, so since you've come out and you're now living as the person you want to be, the
right.
person you feel that you should be, what kind of effects has this had on you socially?
A wide varying degree of effects, from loss of friendships, family even. I've gained many friendships as well.
Mm-hmm.
Harassment, walking down the street, bad words thrown at me as I'm walking down the sidewalk mm-hmm. or something like that. So, I mean, there's opposition to who I am, but there's also a growing support as well, too. I mean, as people become more aware of who trans people are,
mm-hmm.
They're starting to realize that that we aren't the freaks everyone thinks we are. I don't know, for
right.
lack of better expression.
It's all about education and awareness.
Definitely, yes.
How has it affected you in terms of employment?
I'm unemployed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. For about 18 months, I tried to find a job and faced a lot of uncomfortable interviews.
How would that be? Can you give us an example?
Well,
maybe of an interview that was uncomfortable that you felt would never have happened if you weren't a trans person.
Well, I mean, I forward my resume, and I mean, you see it as Michaela Schultz, and you kind of form your impressions of who mm-hmm. Michaela Schultz is supposed to be. And then I walk in and kind of dissolve that impression that you had.
Okay.
And, I mean, the interviewers are usually very uncomfortable. You can see it in their body language and in the way they interact with you, which in turn makes me uncomfortable, right?
Right.
You know, so...
therefore, not a good interview.
No, definitely.
Right.
And there's always some kind of excuse that, mm-hmm. you know, whether I'm not appropriate for the job or something like that.
Right.
Yeah.
Can we go back to children? I think it's important to talk about children. Recently, I was reading something about the Girl Scouts in the United States that has accepted a young trans
right.
girl who's transgender from male to female, right?
That's right.
It appears
yep.
to be male.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about that? What you know about that?
I believe it's in Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
She was refused membership into the Girl Scouts, and her parents fought that, and the Girl Scouts of America, or of Colorado at least, mm-hmm. I'm not sure on that detail, has chosen to accept trans transgender children into their organization.
I wonder if there's going to be a backlash from the other parents on that.
Probably. Yeah. I mean, there always is.
Well, kudos
is.
To
I
them
mean,
for doing that.
Yeah, for sure.
And the definitely. Other thing is kudos to the parents. This is something that recently there's been more media about parents who have young children mm-hmm. who have expressed their feelings of, you know, not right. feeling like they look and, right. and wanting to be maybe a little girl if they look like they're a boy, mm-hmm. but they want to be a girl. And parents are starting to be more accepting of that and allow their children to,
right. yeah.
to just be who they feel they want to be. And then, of course, you've got... So it's not... The parents also have been castigated, I think, publicly. There was a case,
definitely.
I think, in Ontario, was it, maybe? Just recently.
About the genderless child?
The genderless child.
Yeah.
The parents refused to divulge the child's gender.
Yeah, parents faced a lot of opposition over that.
Right. Why is that so important to us? It's interesting.
I don't know.
Have to know.
I don't know why people need to know what's between your legs all the time. Really.
And we do.
I mean,
yeah, it's
that's so important in our culture. That's what it boils down to,
yeah.
right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that would make a good research paper, I think. Why is it so important for us to know what's between people's legs? Yeah, we have a few minutes left until the break. What are we looking at, Jim, about 3 minutes?
Yeah.
Okay.
3.5.
Okay. Let's go back to the childhood. I think this is just really, really important because mm-hmm. nowadays in our time, we're hoping, I believe, that young children who are not feeling, I'm thinking about not feeling like they feel the way they look,
right.
and they're expected to act according to the way they look in our society.
Right. Well, there's strict rules to how
right.
boys and girls are supposed to act and
right.
what interests they're supposed to mm-hmm. have. I mean, you hear all the time, no, this isn't for boys, or
right.
or this is for girls and you're a boy and you're not supposed to do that and stuff like that. I mean, we're taught to enforce those gender norms
mm-hmm.
Upon our children, and I think there's a growing awareness, not to the extreme where children are going to identify as transgender or the opposite
mm-hmm.
gender, but even letting your son play with dolls or
mm-hmm.
or letting your daughter dress up as a cowboy or what
mm-hmm.
have you, right?
And I think also there's maybe a misinformation or lack of understanding about gay and lesbian people
mm-hmm.
and transgender people. Because, I mean, I have gay friends who've said, you know, when I was a kid, I wasn't interested in the girl stuff, even though I was a girl, or I wasn't
right.
interested in
right.
the boy stuff, even though I'm a boy.
Right.
But they're not transgender.
No, no. Well, there seems to be a misconception that because gays and lesbians challenge gender norms through their sexual orientation. I mean, traditionally, if you're a man, you're supposed to be attracted to women.
Right.
Women, right? And
right.
vice versa. So, in a way, they're challenging gender norms too,
mm-hmm.
right? Through that, I mean, a lot of people would suspect that they would have some understanding of transgender people, but a lot of times they're as uninformed as the general public about
mm-hmm.
transgender people and transgender issues. So.
And I think we can talk about that when we come back from the break, because I don't believe anybody really understands
right.
what that's all about, and
yeah.
it might help to get a little bit of education on that. So we have a minute left, and I wanted to once again let you know that November 20th is it International?
International Transgender Day of Remembrance.
Day of Remembrance.
Yeah.
And what will something be occurring here in Regina? Will there be a ceremony or something? Or?
I'm not sure if there's anything planned.
Because I know we have done it in the past.
Yeah.
There has been.
Yeah.
So there may be something planned. If there is something planned, let us know and we'll announce it.
Yeah,
on the show,
for sure.
Let people know so that if they want to join in on it. I went to a service I think last year and then the year before.
Right.
Where there was a candle ceremony and there were names of people.
Yeah, there's been a couple different events in the past.
Yeah, so we'll see if that comes up and we'll be back after the break.
This is my last song. This is from my dad.
Was Tori Amos, and that was at a that was a live recording at a music festival. I was privileged to see Tori in Toronto about 3 years ago, and she's a very interesting performer.
And we're back. Welcome back to Human Rights Radio on CJTR. I'm Mona Hill, your co-host with Jim Hutchings, and today we're speaking with Michaela Schultz, who is with Transgender Support Services in Regina. Actually, it's a province-wide organization now, isn't it?
Right, TransSASC Support Services.
TransSASC Support Services. Before the break, we were talking about the topic of sexual and gender attraction and that sort of thing. And I kind of wanted to go on to talk a little bit about something that I think the average person is very confused about, and that is transsexual attraction. And I'm thinking about people who I've heard speaking and asking questions about, well, if someone is originally male and they turn female because they feel like a female, are they then automatically attracted to a male because they're female now?
Right.
And you know, to start the conversation off, I'll just throw that out.
Well, it's just as confusing for me as it is for you. I mean, yes, sexuality among the trans community. I think the problem comes with the terminology we use.
Okay.
Because it's based on gender, right?
So maybe for the audience who's not 100% clear, clarify the difference between gender and sex. Because when a baby's born, we say, well, what sex is the baby?
Right.
Assuming that if it's male genitalia, then it's going to be male.
Right.
And everything about it will be male.
Right. And that's your biological, your birth sex.
So that's biological sex.
Yeah, okay. your physical body,
yes.
Your chromosomes and stuff like that.
So what about gender? Where does that fit in?
Gender is essentially in your brain. It's how you feel you are.
Okay.
Your self-awareness.
Right. I mean, everyone's got a gender, and whether that conforms to their birth sex or not,
okay.
I mean, another question, but right. Yeah.
Okay. So now continue on.
About sexuality?
Yes. Yes.
And that's a whole
other... And I guess sexual preference,
a whole other
attraction.
Topic as well.
Who you're
yeah.
attracted to, regardless of whether you're male your whole life, female
right.
your whole life,
well,
or,
I mean, if
or switching back and forth? Or
if there's one thing we can take from gay and lesbian community is it's not your gender which determines your sexual attraction, right? I mean, otherwise we would all be heterosexual, mm-hmm. right? So, but among the trans community, as I was saying, those terms just aren't adequate. I mean, I would argue even in the general public, in the general community, because the terms are based on gender themselves. I mean, if you're a gay man, you're a man who's attracted to a man. A
right.
lesbian, you're, you know, I mean, you need gender to determine those. So now, within the transgender community, or with transsexuals, if you're changing your gender, or you're gender fluid, or you're in between bigender, or third gender, I mean, how are those terms applicable? I mean,
right.
if someone doesn't even identify as either male or female,
good point.
You couldn't label them as being gay or lesbian
right.
or what have you. So,
right.
I mean...
I suppose in the spectrum,
right.
you may come across people who, if you ask them, they're not sure themselves.
No, definitely. I mean, you're being gay or straight is... I mean, that's
pretty easy, actually. After
yeah,
you've been describing all this, it sounds like that's pretty easy.
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, that's only two options
mm-hmm.
of a whole spectrum of one's
so there is
sexuality,
a definite spectrum
right?
of sexuality.
Yeah, I mean, you're,
yeah.
you, well, there's bisexual
mm-hmm.
as well, you know, someone who's attracted to both genders,
mm-hmm.
And there's varying degrees to that, you know, you might be more attracted to women or more attracted to men, so
mm-hmm.
if we consider it a spectrum, a scale, I mean, everyone lands on that scale at some point, and, the same concept can be applied to gender identity. Everyone lands
mm-hmm.
somewhere on a scale of gender. So if you're not identifying as male, or you're not identifying as female, I mean, these terms of sexual orientation are hard to apply to someone who is transgender, or someone who is gender variant, or challenging gender in some way, right?
I'm thinking about the psychiatrist sitting with someone who's really uncomfortable.
Right.
And trying to understand themselves. And then flipping into the diagnostic and statistical manual. And I can see why it would be so much easier for someone who's in the healthcare profession to say, well, this is where you belong. Because
right.
If you can't understand, I don't know how I can expect to understand.
Yeah, well, we need boxes, we need labels
we
to
do.
Put everyone in so
right.
we can better understand.
And maybe that's our problem, is we need to stop labeling people
right.
and boxing them in and just allow them to be who they are.
That expression, think outside the box. Right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
yeah.
yeah, wow. One of the areas I wanted to cover was you talked, you know, when we talked earlier about you being on the show, you mentioned something about suicide. And let's talk about that. Let's talk about suicide. When do suicidal thoughts begin with people who are feeling that they're not the people they're supposed to be?
Well, suicide for trans people would begin the same time as anyone else. I mean,
okay.
once you start feeling, I guess, that there's no other option for you, right? That can come at an early age, because as people we determine our genders at an early age. So, I mean, once you realize that your gender does not conform to the expectations people have of you, you're already starting to struggle within yourself, have anxieties and whatnot, and of
mm-hmm.
course that can lead to ideas of suicide. So,
and I would imagine it could easily lead to addictions issues.
Definitely.
Which in turn could
definitely
of course,
addictions,
and that, you know,
depression,
compiles the suicide issues. Yes,
and, depression, and
mental health problems.
I mean, all issues that plague our culture.
Mm-hmm.
From the statistics that I've been seeing coming out of new studies and stuff like that, I mean, people are starting to collect data specific to the trans community, and a lot of this data that's coming out are showing very high rates of all the ailments of society.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, depression and drug and alcohol abuse and suicide. One of the most recent studies says that transgender people, 41% will attempt suicide at one point in their life.
Wow.
And that's the highest out of any demographic.
And how does one intervene? What kind of intervention is there for someone who seeks out help for this issue? I would imagine that it's
suicide,
very difficult to find
suicide
somebody.
Intervention is applicable to any group
mm-hmm.
of people, right?
Okay.
But I mean,
I would imagine that the person who's doing the intervention would have to have a fairly decent understanding.
Sure, yeah, you got to understand the underlying issues.
Exactly.
Right.
So is there any specific training for that you're aware of in the health field?
No. For specifically,
you're not aware, or you know that there isn't.
No, I'm pretty sure that there isn't.
Okay.
Not definitely not within Saskatchewan.
Mm-hmm.
You mean like transgender specific suicide intervention?
Yes.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Right.
Although, I shouldn't say so much. I recently took a suicide intervention workshop, so.
So now you are.
Yeah, I'm. I'm the leader in that field.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. It's good to know there's someone.
Definitely.
And which is great because of the Trans Support Services network
right.
that you have. If anyone knows of someone who is
mm-hmm.
thinking suicidal thoughts or expressing and
definitely.
Expressing them in particular,
definitely.
You know, they can get in touch with you.
Yeah.
Yeah. And how would they do that?
Well, you can contact TransSask directly through their website at TransSask. It's TransSask.org, and there's a form to fill out there, or you can email info@transsask.org.
Okay.
Both of those will come directly to my personal email.
Oh, good.
So,
and what about your Facebook page?
We have
Is that accessible?
Yeah, we have a Facebook page.
Mm-hmm.
Just search for TransSask
mm-hmm.
Support Services and you'll come on there. So make sure you like our page.
Yes.
We're looking for more likes.
There's a lot of really interesting information that's posted on the TransSask
Certainly.
Facebook
I try
page.
To keep it up to date. Any new articles or
right.
information or stuff that comes out. Daily, I try to do it daily, keep it up to date.
I know I've got quite a good education from reading it.
Yeah.
and also, you're posting things that are from a global perspective as well.
Definitely, yeah.
What was the latest one? It was about Iran, wasn't it? My notes here. Oh, yes, whole sex change as a cure for homosexuality in Iran.
Right, then that's an issue that's been... Some are raising awareness of in Iran and some other Arabic countries that they're considering sex reassignment surgery as essentially as a cure for homosexuality. So if you're attracted to someone of the same sex and you change your gender,
then you're acceptable.
Right, because now you're in a heterosexual relationship.
In a heterosexual relationship.
So
that's fascinating, that
that's
perspective.
That's scary.
It is, yeah. Very scary.
I mean, there's, again, like going back to the discussion about the differences between gender identity and sexual orientation, I mean, there's no correlation there whatsoever.
For some reason, I'm thinking about a gay couple in Iran.
Right, yeah.
And if they're forced to, or strongly encouraged, shall we say,
right, yeah,
to partake in this procedure,
yeah,
you're going to end up with both of them being transformed into women so that they would both be, you know, yeah, acceptable and then not be able to be with one another. It's crazy.
The whole thought of it is just crazy to me. The one in relationship.
So who would be the one that would be chosen? And would you make that choice yourself? And
a lot of the times it's the family that pressures them into changing their sex. But, I mean, that's the last reason why.
Is this cultural or is it religious or is it a combination of both?
Both. I mean, the religious leaders in Iran support this,
mm-hmm,
saying their reasoning is that homosexuality is a sin,
mm-hmm,
but changing your gender is acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
I just watched a documentary on the topic, and one of the religious leaders, their argument is everything in God's world is changing, so it would be acceptable that a person's gender can change as, mm-hmm, well, right?
Which in some regards may be a little more forward thinking than in our society in terms of that acceptance of the changes, the fact that people do change.
Right, right, yeah.
But the reasons for it, I think, are the ones that we would question.
I mean, just because you're a gay man, you shouldn't be pressured into changing your sex just to be with the person you love.
That you love.
Right.
Because that's what it boils down to, really, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly, yeah, for sure.
With all this conversation about sex and about gender, it all boils down to everybody wants somebody to love.
Yeah.
And to be, you know, and to love.
You're going to make me tear up.
Oh, no. It wouldn't be the first time I made somebody cry on the show.
Either that or we'll burst into song here.
Oh. We could do that. Yeah, basically, I think that's
what's happening. I mean, people are different all over the place. I mean, in all of their identity, not just gender too. Yeah. I mean, your political views, your religious views. I mean, everyone's got their own individual identity.
Yeah.
And your gender identity and the way you express that is just another aspect of who you are as a complete human being.
And then who you choose to love
can
be totally separate from that.
Definitely it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
because that is a choice.
It's just another building block in who you are.
Right. In building your life.
Right.
Yeah. And we did mention religion. Is there anywhere in the world where religion and culture are at a point where a transgender person would be totally accepted?
Oh, definitely. There's examples in most all religions of gender variant people. I mean, even in the Christian Bible, you see mention of eunuchs.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, by our today's definitions, we could consider someone who is a eunuch as transgender, gender variant in some way. So, I mean, every culture, almost every culture and every religious belief system has examples of gender variance at some point in their history. I don't know where to go from there. I'd give you specifics, but
the other thing that you thought would be interesting for us to talk about is HIV AIDS amongst the transgender community.
Right.
Is it actually any different than any other group of people?
Well, as I said earlier about new surveys that are coming up and new statistics, we're finding that the rate of HIV infection among transgender people is, again, the highest compared to any other demographic.
I wonder why.
It's because of the social condition that they live in.
Okay.
I mean, a lot of transgender people find themselves living in the streets.
Drug use,
prostitution,
right.
Stuff like that. So, I mean, your social conditions are going to put you at a higher risk of HIV infection. Mm-hmm. And jurisdictions where statistics have been kept is showing that people who identify as transgender, gender variant, it's showing that they represent the highest demographic of HIV infection.
What kind of changes do you think need to be made?
There's lots of changes. Policy reform.
Which you talked about when we first opened the show, about the new bill at the House of Commons.
Right.
Do you see hope for that? A little bit of background. It's been through two readings, right, before the election?
Right, yeah. Did we even mention that yet?
I thought we had opened with that, but maybe I planned on opening with it, but I didn't.
No,
go for it.
New bill has been introduced in the House of Commons on a national level, right? To include gender identity and gender expression in the Human Rights Code, mm-hmm. as well as in the Criminal Code of Canada as a basis of hate crime. This is the fourth time this bill has been introduced now.
People might argue that it's already... why would you have to have this as in the Human Rights Code? Because it's already illegal to go out and assault people, that sort of thing, regardless of what gender they are.
Right, but there's characteristics to an individual's identity
mm-hmm.
that are the basis of hate crimes or discrimination. I mean, okay. Whether that's race or your religious affiliation mm-hmm. or your physical sex, whether you're male or female or intersex, one characteristic that's not included in human rights legislation is gender identity and gender expression. And I mean, by introducing such legislation isn't limited to protection of only the transgender community, but I would argue extends protection to all people of mm-hmm. Canada.
Mm-hmm.
Because we all challenge, our entire culture is challenging gender norms to some degree. So,
right.
I mean, I heard a story from the Maritimes of a young boy that was assaulted in school because he showed up to school wearing a pink shirt.
Oh, yes.
I mean, he's not transgender.
Right.
But we associate that pink shirt right. with being, should only be worn by a
feminized.
Girl, right?
Yes.
You know, so that would be a basis of gender expression.
Okay. Yeah. Well, thank you for explaining that.
Yeah.
And thank you for being on our show today.
Well, thank you for having me.
I think we've had a good education for today. I'm sure there's a lot more to come.
Yeah, it's only an hour show.
Yeah.
Is that? Yeah, okay.
Well, thanks a lot, Michaela.
Thank you. Go ahead
and take it away, Jim.
As we close this week's Human Rights Radio on CJTR Community Radio, we hope you've enjoyed listening to and have learned something new about human rights for all people. Every day and every moment in every corner of the world, injustice cries out for your intervention. To paraphrase a great humanitarian, if you can't help everybody, just help one. And whether the abuses stop immediately or take a long time to end, the gift of your attention and intervention can make a profound and positive impact on the ability of individuals and communities to endure and prevail. For info on past and upcoming shows with links to human rights actions and information, go to amnestysaskatchewan.ca. Peter Benenson, the founder of Amnesty International, often said, "It's better to light a candle of hope than to curse the darkness."